Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 112, recorded Saturday, November 22nd, 2014. This is the podcast giving the voice to the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: holiday airport etiquette refresher and travel tax pileup. So I'm coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois. I'm trying to give you something new to listen to if you're stuck in line somewhere while traveling Thanksgiving week. Unfortunately, if my voice sounds a little rough, it's because I think I picked up a cold this week, probably on my flight down to New Orleans from somebody. That's always an occupational hazard. So if this one, again, if the voice sounds a little rough, sorry about that, but I had this podcast written, and I wanted to get it out before everybody started traveling Thanksgiving week. Of course, don't look for me, because I did land back here in Chicago Wednesday night, and I'm on my normal Thanksgiving week lockdown. I don't plan to travel until the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. I much prefer to just clear out of the airports and leave this to the families. I was going to open up this episode with, I don't know, kind of a joke sponsorship, you know, sort of something like, this episode of the Travel Commons Podcast is brought to you by People Express, thanking Spirit Airlines for making people nostalgic for us and Newark's North Terminal. So, because, you know, for anyone old enough to have flown People Express in the early 80s, I kind of thought that would be, I don't know, a little bit of a chuckle. But then last week, I was walking through New Orleans Airport. I saw a People Express counter. I mean, what? Wait. You know, it turns out that some group picked up the name for a new airline hubbing out of Newport News Airport down in Southern Virginia. I guess the service started this summer only to stop 3 months later after a ground truck ran into one of the planes, one of their two planes. They were supposed to relaunch in October, and then that didn't happen. And then I think it was this month that Newport News Airport evicted them for failure to turn over the passenger facility charge that People Express had collected on ticket sales over the summer. So I don't know, maybe my fake promo should go, I don't know, the other way, with Spirit thanking the new People Express for letting Spirit say to their passengers, hey, you could do worse. So following up, a couple of comments from the last episode. On the Travel Commons Facebook page, Steve Frick said, listen to your last episode last week flying into Atlanta. As I walked down Concourse A, I saw TAP, the craft beer bar you mentioned. It looked like an aquarium full of smokers. I tell you, I've rummaged through kind of the file folder on my mobile phone, my HTC One, and I found a picture of that bar, and then I ended up posting it on the Facebook page under Steve's post. I'll tell you what, he absolutely nailed it. Aquarium full of smokers. I don't think I could have come up with a better description. And then following up on the description of my first MARTA ride from Atlanta Airport heading up north, Dan Gradwald sent a note pointing to the website toandfromtheairport.com. He had just returned from 5 weeks in the Balkan and said he had used the website for all those trips and has used it to plan upcoming trips to Panama City, the one in Panama, not the one on the Redneck Riviera, and Santiago, Chile. I'd used it a couple of years ago when looking at rapid transit from Beijing Airport into the city. Now, I ended up punting and taking a cab, an adventure in its own right that I describe in episode 109. However, I think it's a great resource, but as you can imagine, it's tough to keep it updated. I was looking at the page for O'Hare, just kind of scanning something I know after Dan had sent me the pointer, and the train section doesn't reflect the recent surcharge for CTA for L rides originating at O'Hare. And the taxi section doesn't sort of describe the logistical differences between getting a cab into the city, which you just go out into the cab rank, versus one to the suburbs, which involves calling one of the cab companies, getting an assigned number, and then waiting one lane over Unless, that is, you want to pay a meter and a half to one of the city cabs. Kind of welcome to Chicago. Well, anyhow, I sent a note, I don't know, it was like a week and a half ago, to the site owner, Steve Pels, with these updates. But I haven't heard back from him, and I haven't seen the changes reflected on the site yet. So I don't know how often he updates it. Turning to my Twitter notifications, Chris Christensen of the Amateur Traveler podcast sent a quick Twitter message on last episode's seat recline rant. He said, "I agree with your assessment of the knee defender story. I'm 6'3" and can work on a laptop in United's Economy Plus seats." And then last month, Arnold Heines pointed me to the Blues Smart carry-on bag, the roller board with its own app, own phone app, allowing you to track the bag, lock the bag, and get notifications when it moves out of range from you. It completely rocketed, completely blew out its $50,000 Indigo fundraising goal. I mean, when I looked at it, I think on Friday, they had 1.1 million in pledges. Now, the crowdfunding closes this Monday, November 24th. Their Indiegogo page is really good. I'll post a link in the show notes. It's a nice video, good description of the product. There's a timeline laying out the steps between now and their July shipping date. I mean, they definitely hit the sweet spot of travel technology lust. Arnold and I traded tweets on whether or not to pull the trigger. Arnold makes a good point about wanting to see how the inside is laid out. That's actually the one part of the bag that there's no picture of on the Indiegogo page. Now, I'm in the market for a new suitcase anyhow, but I don't know. Can I wait until July? Yeah, this thing will get the better of me. I think right now it's like $234. I'll just probably pull the trigger this weekend before the campaign closes. And as I continue to prattle on in each episode about the wonders and benefits of TSA PreCheck, I came up with a new one early this week, early Monday morning. You know, since I don't have to take my shoes off, I don't have to risk waking my wife up by turning on the lights to make sure I don't pick a pair of socks with a hole in it. Okay, it's a knit. But I'll tell you, it's one less thing to spike my morning. And I do have to give the TSA credit for adapting to the popularity of PreCheck. Again, this past Monday morning in O'Hare's Terminal 1, which is the United Airline terminal, definitely rush hour with all the consultants flying out to their client sites. They had four lanes of PreCheck, kind of shuttling all the non-PreCheck Premier flyers to another lane nearby. I mean, it could have been ugly, but I was through in 5 minutes. And longtime listeners to this podcast know that I've bashed the TSA enough. So I on this one, I got to give them credit where credit's due. I don't know if you caught the news at the beginning of the month that Hilton Honors program was hit by hackers. I guess after getting replacement credit cards sent to me after the Target and then the Home Depot breaches, I got to tell you, I've become a little complacent about these sort of security announcements. Hilton had very weak security. I mean, they were allowing the use of a four-digit PIN instead of a strong password, and that ended up allowing what is suspected to be just a brute force attack, not a problem with just four numbers. And then once in, the hackers were just draining accounts, most of them swapping points for gift cards or selling the points on hacker forums for pennies on the equivalent dollar. Though, there were a couple of thieves redeeming points for nights. One victim found a quarter million of his points had been used to buy $1,200 worth of nights at sort of low-end Hilton brands along the East Coast. Now, Hilton hasn't said how many points they've had to reimburse. You know, if you think about it, many people treat their award points accounts like savings accounts for travel, you know, sort of banking miles or frequent sleeper points for, say, a summer vacation. But until recently, airlines and hotels haven't secured them with anything close to bank-like security. Indeed, many airlines and many hotels don't run these programs themselves. They outsource them to third parties. Hilton and Delta both allowed four-digit PINs. Delta is switching over to strong passwords. United still allows six-character passwords, but it's changing. Before Delta's switch, I noticed American and Marriott forcing the use of sort of slightly stronger eight-character passwords, and Hilton has now added a CAPTCHA to slow down brute force attacks. I mean, it's certainly not, you know, banking-style two-factor authentication, but it's a start. I guess another good start would be for me to change all my travel site passwords to something other than ABC123. You know, there was another story I tweeted out this week involving in-flight Wi-Fi. I guess some guy, some Canadian guy, racked up almost $1,200 checking email and downloading PowerPoint files on his Heathrow to Singapore flight. I guess it, $29 for the initial 30 megabyte allotment, and which means he ended up with over $1,100 in overage fees. I mean, the guy gets this email receipt and is just probably just stunned. Then, this being the age of social media, he appears to have immediately created a little picture with his receipt and a Sing airplane and posted it on Twitter with the first word in all caps, gouged, and then put together a blog post. Now, the guy, Jeremy Gooch, G-U-T-S-C-H-E, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I mean, he bills himself on his Twitter page and also on his LinkedIn profile as innovation expert, author, keynote speaker, and chief trend hunter, CEO at trendhunter.com. So, you know, you look at this and you think if he's that hip to trends, you'd expect him to know how expensive in-flight overseas internet connectivity is. Now, the Wi-Fi provider on air says, look, you got to pay, saying the process for purchasing its services is entirely transparent. Passengers can choose to end their sessions when they reach a certain price limit. A graphic shows data consumption at all times, and users can disconnect whenever they want. Now, Gooch said he only sent some email, uploaded a 4 megabyte PowerPoint file, and looked at 155 web pages. On air, the Wi-Fi provider said to consume several hundred megabytes during one flight takes much more than basic email viewing. For example, downloading heavy attachments, cloud access, maybe using Skype. Now, I actually think the cloud access might be the culprit. While I love having all my documents synced to the cloud to get at them from, you know, any of my devices, and also for backup, I found that it can quickly chew up bandwidth. When I first got my Verizon Wi-Fi hotspot, I found myself easily grinding through 6 to 10 gigabytes a month and couldn't figure it out. I mean, until I remembered that I had my 2 gigabyte Outlook archive PST file set to sync up to Microsoft's OneDrive. So now, when I switch over to the hotspot, I kill off that OneDrive sync app. I mean, it can't tell the difference between a regular Wi-Fi and the Wi-Fi connection going to the Verizon spot. You know, once I started to do that, you know, no more nagging emails from Verizon, which, you know, I think that would have been a much more expensive lesson at 35,000 feet. And hey, if you have any travel experiences, Wi-Fi or otherwise, or just some general conversations, thoughts, questions, a story, comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments@travelcommons.com. You can use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. Send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page like Steve Frick did. Or you can always go old school and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is holiday airport etiquette refresher. Here's a mouthful for you. Now, unless you've been sort of catatonic for the last week, you know that we're creeping up on the busiest travel day of the year, sort of Travelgeddon, as one TV reporter called it, which immediately caused me to do an Elvis and throw something large at the hotel TV screen. Luckily for me, today's flat screens are much more resilient than the tubes of Elvis's day. Yes, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving is nigh. I know this also because right about this time, the Travel Commons mailbox gets filled with helpful story ideas from PR firms, kind of along the lines of this one from Energy Water. The day before Thanksgiving is the busiest travel day of the year. Between the kids, pets, and luggage, holiday travel can be a hassle. These 6 travel must-haves take the stress out of traveling to see family and loved ones. Okay, let's play with this one. Let's play along. Top of the list, energy water, of course, which seems to be, I don't know, some twist on caffeinated water. I mean, you know, go ahead, give it to your kids and see how popular you are with your seatmates in the back of a Spirit Airlines plane. Number two, noise-canceling headphones. Always a popular item, especially when surrounded by kids hyped up on energy water. Number three, therapeutic eye mask. That one, I don't know. I don't see a lot of those on my flights. Number four, portable power charger. Now, you know, that's, I think, you know, one of these sort of battery-in-a-box thing with a couple of USB ports at the end. This one, I tell you, I'd move this one above the eye mask. I mean, very handy, especially around travel time when you've got families huddling around airport electrical outlets, kind of the same way their forefathers huddled around the fire while on the hunt. Number five, packing cubes. No, never used them. I don't know. They just take up space that could be used for other clothes. Number six, portable UV germ sanitizer. Probably a bit more popular in these, you know, sort of Ebola paranoid times. I guess instead of swabbing everything down with hand sanitizer, which I've seen people do on an airplane, I guess you sort of wave the UV wand over the surface. I don't know. That seems, I don't know, a bit too easy. I think I'd want to see some efficacy data before putting money down on that. You know, so that's an example of sort of the tons of bring this lists that you see running around. What I haven't seen, though, is I haven't seen an advice list for what I think is really the problem during holiday travel, and that's airport etiquette. It's not just the crowds. It's the crowds of, well, I don't know, what some might call clueless travelers. I don't know. I think amateur is certainly a nicer and probably a more accurate term. So for those amateur travelers, or folks who've been off the road for a bit and need a refresher, here's, I don't know, a list of some good etiquette tips that, from my recent travel observations, need to be said. So let's start at the front of the airport, the security line. Look, the TSA is pushing pre-check, so you may get lucky and find it on your boarding pass, or a TSA person may randomly pull you out of the regular line and send you over to pre-check. It's your lucky day. Don't spoil it, though, by not knowing the pre-check rules. Put your phone away and read the signs. Don't take off your shoes. Don't pull your liquids out. Keep your jacket on. Look, read the signs and don't slow it down for everyone else. Then, once you're through security, if getting to your gate involves riding on some sort of moving walkway or going up an escalator, stand on the right, because people are walking, usually quickly, on the left. Now, traveling with others, you're going to, you know, sort of naturally want to stand abreast, continue your conversations, but then you're blocking everyone else. Don't do it unless you want to get run over. And then when you hit the airport Starbucks for your pre-flight coffee, remember that this isn't your neighborhood Starbucks. You know, the one run by friendly Starbucks-trained baristas? This one is run by Sodexo Marriott that doesn't care so much about coffee training. And the folks there aren't quite as efficient. And there are usually a lot of people behind you in line who are in a hurry. All this means, keep your order to three adjectives or less. Tall skim latte? That's okay. The half-calf, three-pump, no-foam, venti vanilla latte, not so much. Now, when you're queuing up at the gate, don't try and cheat on the boarding. Everybody's looking at everybody else's boarding passes, looking at the numbers and the boarding groups printed on them. And the airlines are also telling their agents to get more strict. On almost every flight now, I've been seeing the boarding agent direct someone over to the wall of shame to wait for their boarding group to get called. Don't embarrass your family. Wait your turn. And if you're using an electronic boarding pass, you know, on your smartphone, turn off the auto-rotate on your smartphone. If you don't, odds are that your screen will start oscillating between portrait and landscape mode while you're trying to get it either on, placing it down on the reader for United and or underneath the scanner for others like American. I mean, these readers, they're picky enough. But the oscillating just blows it up. You'll delay the boarding line and quickly earn the scorn of your seatmates, even before you're sitting shoulder to shoulder with them for 2 to 4 hours. And then finally, and this is a big one, don't put your small bag in the overhead. Look, I don't care if you checked a bag. Don't be that person who puts a purse or a briefcase in the overhead. Show a little holiday spirit, put them under the seat in front of you, and leave space for one more rollerboard for the poor urchins in boarding groups 3, 4, or 5. I mean, when that person's bag doesn't get dropped on a tight connection through, say, DFW, and they're able to sit down to Thanksgiving dinner in something other than day-old sweats, they'll thank you. Thank you. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is travel tax pileup. Look, I think I ought to title this entire episode Mark's Rant, because I'm just rolling right from the hey you once a year traveler, get out of my airport, to hey you politician, get out of my wallet. Looking at my last couple of hotel bills in New Orleans, stateroom tax, city room tax, occupancy tax, convention and visitors bureau assessment, it adds 15% to my room rate, just a bit more than the regular New Orleans sales tax of 9%. Last year, a travel association, the Global Business Travel Association, put out a list of the top 10 worst cities for what they call discriminatory travel taxes, those taxes that are specific on travel services, like hotels and rental cars, that are above and beyond general sales taxes. Now, New Orleans didn't make the cut for this list. Top of the list was Portland, Oregon, at $23 a day in extra travel taxes, Boston second at $19 a day, and then those welcoming Midwest cities of Indianapolis, Minneapolis, and Chicago, rounding out the top five. We all know why this happens. It's because travelers don't vote, at least in the places where they get tagged with these travel taxes. So for local politicians, raising the hotel or rental car tax generates much less blowback than a property tax bump. I mean, for example, of the 150 largest cities, 120 of them have some sort of dedicated tax on hotel rooms. And there's real money there. $487 million of travel taxes in 2012 for New York City, $240 million for San Francisco. Now, hotel taxes, St. Louis, surprisingly, has the highest rate, 22%, with the average in the U.S. being around 13.5%. San Francisco Airport has the highest rental car tax, 24%. The average for that is 12.8%. Now, of course, on top of these taxes, cities will stack on additional line items. So now the New Orleans hotel tax, the city and state, is 13%, which is just kind of below that average. But then they tack on a dollar for city occupancy tax and another $2.50 for that convention and visitors bureau, which now bumps that average 13% tax rate up to 15%. Now, I got to say, though, that, you know, these add-ons pale in comparison to, say, the 14% tourism tax I got pegged with the last time I was up in Napa. Rental cars, though, by and far are the worst. And in one of my rare Travel Commons blog posts, I looked at a string of four rental car receipts and saw taxes and state surcharges and airport facility charges increased my final bill anywhere from 27 to 51%. Well, what do you do about it? Well, you know, I mean, with rental cars, I tell you, I work my damnedest to skip them. In New Orleans, I pick hotels that let me walk to and from my client's office. I skip the rental car fees and get exercise. That's a twofer because, you know, given the food in New Orleans, I need all the exercise I can get. Hotels, that's a bit tougher. I mean, you might think about using Airbnb, but that loophole is getting closed. Starting last month, Airbnb is collecting San Francisco's 14% hotel tax, and they're getting squeezed by most other cities. Couch surfing? I don't know. At least for a business trip, that is, for me, not worth the hassle. So, I don't know. Whenever I pass the tourist kiosk in New Orleans Airport, I always make sure to take something, even if I don't really need it, because I'm going to be paying for it, whether I take it or not. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 112. I hope you all enjoyed my bitching and ranting. I hope that my voice didn't bother you, this cold voice, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Pulled some new music off of CC Mixter. As always, check out the show notes for music links. If you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or audio file, comment, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com is the address. M. Peacock on Twitter, the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, and we've got links to the Facebook wall and to Twitter. I've got links for both of those on the Travel Commons website, because you can always post comments underneath the show notes at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website. Safe travels. I hope that the Thanksgiving holiday holiday travel week is smooth for you and for your family. That you have a great Thanksgiving, and I look forward to talking to you soon. with a better voice during the next Travel Commons podcast. Until then, take care, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling,